Hello and welcome to Africa Media Matters, featuring debate, interviews and comment about the media across the African continent. I'm Audrey Brown. Coming up later, a roundup of the media news and an interview with Salim Amin, whose organization A24 Media is helping to revolutionize online African news content.
We set up A24 to change the perception of Africa and to get away from this stereotypical picture of Africa being a continent of death, destruction, war, famine and genocide, and to look at the positive stories about opportunity and business and music and culture and history. Amazing things about this continent that not many people talk about.
Africa Media Matters is brought to you from IWPR Center for Crisis Reporting. IWPR, giving voice, driving change. First, we turn the spotlight on Zimbabwe, where over the last decade, press freedoms have taken a heavy battering. Independent media outlets have been closed down, and scores of journalists intimidated, arrested, or driven into exile, while state-controlled outlets continued to dominate the media landscape. When the unity government was formed in February 2009, there were hopes that this might, at last, lead to new guarantees for press freedom. And there has been one apparently significant development, the setting up of a new media watchdog, the Zimbabwe Media Commission, whose role includes the issuing of licenses for independent newspapers, radio, and TV stations. It finally came into being in December after much wrangling over appointees. And today we ask, what are the commission's powers and what impact will it really have on Zimbabwe's beleaguered media? To discuss those issues and the future of Zimbabwe's media in general, we have with us Guguletu Moyo, a Zimbabwean lawyer currently based in London. She was previously legal advisor to the Associated Newspapers Group of Zimbabwe, but is currently working for the Media Legal Defense Initiative, which is an organization that helps journalists and media outlets defend their rights. So, Gugu, first of all, give us a bit of background on how and why this commission came into being.
The commission came about as a result of an agreement between the two parties who are involved in Zimbabwe's government of national unity. One of the things that they undertook to do was to reform the media regulatory environment. And so they decided to create an independent regulatory authority for the media, which is the Zimbabwe Media Commission.
What is the extent of this commission's powers?
Well, the commission has a range of powers, but what it is supposed to do is really to regulate the activities of journalists and media businesses in Zimbabwe. So part of its responsibility is to license journalists and license media businesses, you know, basically give people permission to practice journalism and to operate, you know, media businesses, newspaper publishers and broadcasters. And then it has a range of other regulatory powers, which include regulating content and the business of media.
Will journalists and the public have any influence on the commission, do you think?
Well, the members of the commission have been appointed from various sectors, and they do include people who have a background in journalism. And they are supposed to, you know, represent a wide cross-section of the public. The Media Commission is also, I think, supposed to listen to and take into account complaints from the public in carrying out its functions. So on paper, I think the commission ought to be influenced by public opinion.
Who is the commission accountable to?
Ultimately, I would say that it's accountable to the courts. If it strays beyond its powers that are set out in the legislation, one can always challenge its practices in courts, and they would be accountable then in law.
And how transparent do you think the decisions of this commission will be?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see. People are optimistic, I think, about some of the people who have been appointed to the commission. The composition of the commission, I think many people have said, is quite good, that they're credible individuals on it. It's difficult, though, to say what will happen in practice. And I think one has to maintain a degree of skepticism, given that the background of commissions and media commissions in Zimbabwe, or at least the history of it, has not been good. There was a media commission which preceded this one, which was in fact very partial and really represented the interests of the ruling party at the time.
Thank you very much, Guguletu Moyo. We also have in studio with us Jerry Jackson, who is a former journalist for the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation and now founder of SW Radio Africa, which is an independent radio station which has broadcast daily into Zimbabwe from London since 2001. And journalist and blogger Innocent Stole, who used to be editor of Zimbabwe's Sunday Mirror newspaper. Welcome to you both. Jerry Jackson, let me ask you, what is your initial reaction to this media commission?
Well, it hasn't been sworn in yet, and we've been waiting for it with bated breath for months, so I'm not very hopeful. And particularly with the composition of it, I mean, there's a person on there, he had an affair with one of the ruling party elite's girlfriends and was thrown out of a window because of that, and he's paralyzed from the neck down. So he knows firsthand what happens to you when you cross the regime. So is he going to make really strong rulings on behalf of a free media? I really doubt it.
Innocent Stole, what do you think? Is this a significant step?
I don't think it's a significant development on two levels. The Zimbabwe Media Commission is operating in the same restrictive legal context. Those same laws have not been repealed, so it makes no difference, really. Secondly, the critical agency or board here is the Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe, which oversees the registration of electronic media. That is where the real game is at, and that's where military men have been, seconded to. So the Media Commission won't really make much of a difference.
So if I'm reading both you and Jerry correctly, you're saying that this commission will have no impact, Jerry?
I fear not, and I think it's more of what Mugabe does extremely well. He ties up everybody with a feeling and a sense that we're all abiding by the laws of Zimbabwe and that we're all moving forward, but they're all delaying tactics. And at the end of the day, he has presidential powers to overturn and overthrow any legal ruling. In 2000, I won a Supreme Court ruling to set up the first independent radio station in Zimbabwe, under the Constitution of Zimbabwe, which guaranteed freedom of expression. And Mugabe had it shut down using presidential powers after 6 days at gunpoint. So he's not changed. He's not going forward into a future election allowing free radio, free press. He's determined to hold on to power.
Is there a way of seeing this as a glass half full rather than glass half empty scenario, Innocent, in the sense that little incremental steps make a difference? So, for instance, the fact that there is a body that you can appeal to as a working journalist on the ground, won't that make a difference?
I don't think so. Prior to 2000, the situation in the independent media was far much more preferable than ever since the onset of the restrictive legislation that came in after the emergence of vibrant opposition politics in Zimbabwe. And these moves do not take us earlier than the situation that existed in 2000. So they are not really incremental as such. What is critical here is that the press has always been the area of the media that the regime has been willing to contemplate certain reforms, but they've not moved an inch with respect to the electronic media, and we see them consolidating their hold on the electronic media. So that, more than anything, signals an entrenching or a consolidation of ZANU-PF's approach to the media as a security area that they will not concede to opposition forces or independent players.
Gugule Tumoyo, let's just bring you back into this again. As an officer of the court, as a lawyer, Jerry mentioned earlier that there was a total disregard for the laws of the country when she set up an independent radio station. It was perfectly within the constitution of Zimbabwe, but she was forced to stop at gunpoint. Is this the way that things are going to unfold still in Zimbabwe, even with this commission? Is there any hope that that would change?
Well, I think many people are hopeful, but the reality, I think, still is that there hasn't been any meaningful legal reform in Zimbabwe. And the thing that really required special attention was the judiciary. For a long time now, Zimbabwe's judiciary has been highly politicized. The judges are really people who have been supporters of Robert Mugabe and who would do his bidding. And despite, you know, campaigns by various human rights groups, by lawyers' associations in Zimbabwe, and efforts as well to reform the judiciary, nothing has changed. I think it would be difficult then to be hopeful and believe that the courts would do things any differently. If there are high political stakes, I think that they still will not deliver independent judgments.
Jerry, you all appear to be very lukewarm on the prospects of what this media commission can do. What then would you say needs to happen to enforce press freedom in Zimbabwe?
I think you have to fundamentally have a different form of government and different people in power. As long as the main architect of the repression, Robert Mugabe, remains as president and has gone into a unity government unwillingly under pressure from South Africa and the region, he is not going to hand over power. There is not going to be any difference. This is a game he is playing to maintain his hold on power with the support of the army and the police. So until you can make inroads into changing the political scenarios on the ground, you can't change media, you can't change health, you can't change education, you can't do anything.
That sounds dire. And it seems like that's a very long-term prospect for the people of Zimbabwe. But Innocent, I'm just thinking about things that could be done in the short and immediate term. What would you like to see happening now so that journalists can work?
The repeal of repressive legislation, the licensing of independent broadcasters, including community radio stations, so that Zimbabweans can engage in conversations about the affairs of their nation amongst themselves freely and without censor, you know, from the state.
Are you finding that the internet and blogging is offering you new opportunities to speak to Zimbabweans and to speak to them in a different way?
It is, but then that only relates to a fraction of the Zimbabwean population, those in the diaspora and sections of urban Zimbabwe with access to internet. And access to internet in Zimbabwe is mostly through, you know, the workplace. And with high levels of unemployment, you can imagine just how minuscule that population that is logged into the internet is.
Jerry, you broadcast directly into Zimbabwe. What are the difficulties that you're finding?
Well, for a long time, the regime jammed our broadcasts using Chinese equipment and expertise to do so. We're not jammed at the moment. I think they've run out of money to do it because it's very expensive. So we have tried using new media to get around that, and we send our news headlines back into Zimbabwe on SMS text messages. We could have hundreds of thousands of people signed up for this service in Zimbabwe, you know, news directly to your phone. But it's always a question of money. So we have 30,000 people we send to at the moment, and we can't add any more numbers. We also use podcasts, and we use Twitter, and we're on Facebook and stuff. But again, as Innocent said, you can only use that for the many Zimbabweans in the diaspora, and that's a quarter or maybe a third of the population now. So for Zimbabweans on the ground back home, there is still almost no information getting into them, particularly to the rural areas.
And of course, the state has the same means and measures that you do. They can also use the internet. They can also blog, or supporters of the government, ZANU-PF specifically. Are you finding that, Innocent?
I think the problem with the state in competing with independent journalists working over the internet is that they came on board quite late on, and it appears that the appreciation of new media is quite low level in terms of government political communication, because there's not any significant website so far that is pro-government that has come up. Most of the leading news websites, you know, that have existed over the last couple of years were launched by journalists fleeing Zimbabwe. So you could say the new media revolution in Zimbabwe was spearheaded by journalists who fled Zimbabwe post-2000. And the government has tried, you know, here and there to launch websites and, you know, blogs, but they lag far behind. They could step up if they were to have the money to invest and perhaps maybe induce certain journalists to buy into their cause, which, of course, is something that others suspect might be happening as we speak. But all the same, at the moment, the government lags far behind.
Now, Jerry and Innocent, just to wrap up this discussion, let me ask you, what guarantees would it take to persuade you and other journalists like yourself in exile to return to work as media practitioners in Zimbabwe? Innocent, you first.
A fundamental reform of the Zimbabwean state. Right now it's a security state, and it views the media as an area of national security, which is why they have promulgated legislation that is quite repressive and makes operating in Zimbabwe as a journalist a very insecure enterprise.
Jerry?
As Innocent said, it actually would be really quite simple. You just have to see real change happening on the ground, and you wouldn't have to do a lot. License some newspapers, allow broadcasters, independent broadcasters, show that there's jobs we can go to and that we can do our jobs without fear of being killed or imprisoned.
So that's the view from London. Thank you all very much for taking part. You're listening to Africa Media Matters from the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. And now, a roundup of the media news from Africa, read by Farah Frankel.
The International Federation of Journalists has described 2009 as a terrible year of bloodshed for the media. It said 137 journalists and media personnel had been killed. More than 100 of them were said to have been specifically targeted because of their work. Somalia was the deadliest African country for journalists. 9 were killed in the 12 months to December. 1 Kenyan and 1 Nigerian journalist also died. Most of the victims are said to have been local reporters covering news in their own communities. In Kenya, a legal battle's brewing between the Media Owners Association, MOA, and industry regulator, the Communications Commission of Kenya, over contentious clauses in a new law that's due to be enforced by the end of January. The country's Business Daily newspaper says the law would restrict cross-media ownership, reduce foreign content on television and radio, and impose new conditions on the foreign ownership of broadcasting stations. The MOA has threatened to take legal action unless the contentious provisions are withdrawn. The Committee to Protect Journalists has expressed its concern about repeated death threats against a Tunisian journalist living in France. The CPJ, which monitors and promotes press freedom around the world, named Slim Bagger as the target of the threats. Bagger, the former editor of the now-defunct opposition monthly L'Audace, said the latest threat arrived at his Paris home in December. He said it was in the form of a letter mailed from Lebanon describing him as a traitor and signed by a man claiming to be a Palestinian refugee. The former editor said he believed the Tunisian authorities were behind the letter, and he's called on the French government to investigate. The Tanzanian government is reported to have banned 2 newspapers after accusing them of violating journalistic ethics. The Citizen newspaper in Dar es Salaam said the decision to ban Kulikoni and Leo Tena was announced by the Information, Culture and Sports Minister, George Kuchia. He was quoted as saying that Kulikoni, which is being banned for 90 days, had also violated the national security law by publishing a story on the army with the headline, "Exam Cheating Bug Enters the Army." The minister added that the newspaper's editor had failed to substantiate the claims made in the report. A group of journalists in Nigeria has condemned what it calls the brutal killing of innocent citizens by the police. A branch of the National Association of Women Journalists in southwestern Nigeria says that 4 people have been killed in a 6-week period at checkpoints across Osun State. The youngest to die was a polytechnic student who was allegedly killed over a bribe. The oldest victim was described as a 70-year-old man.
You're listening to Africa Media Matters from the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. And now we hear from a man who's at the cutting edge of a revolution in the media's coverage of events across Africa, journalist and filmmaker Salim Amin, who's speaking to us from Kenya. Now, Salim is chairman of A24 Media, which is Africa's first online delivery site for material from African journalists and broadcasters, as well as NGOs from around the continent. It was set up in 2008, and it offers contributors global exposure for their content while giving audiences access to what Salim describes as an African voice telling an African story. Salim Amin, welcome to Africa Media Matters. And let me ask you, first of all, why did you set up A24?
Well, we set up A24 for a number of reasons. The first was to set up a platform that would enable African journalists to tell their own stories, an African voice from the African continent, which we felt was lacking in the media marketplace. The second was to change the perception of Africa, both within the continent and outside the continent, and to get away from this stereotypical picture of Africa being a continent of death, destruction, war, famine, and genocide, and to look at the positive stories about opportunity and business and music and culture and history, amazing things about this continent that not many people talk about.
And what's the market for your content?
The primary market that we started was obviously broadcasters, people that would be taking our content, buying our content, and enabling us to give the producers of that content, journalists, and freelance producers around the continent a source of revenue. I mean, we do have deals with organizations like Al Jazeera, who are taking a lot of our content. We are getting a fair amount of requests from European broadcasters, from American broadcasters who want stories. Unfortunately, these are also the requests that are coming are mainly for the bigger news to hard news stories that we do, like on the pirates in Somalia, like on the conflict in the human rights situation in Eritrea, things like Nigeria. When there's a big story, we get more increased interest from international broadcasters for the content. But the difference with us is, Audrey, is that the content, even the hard news content that we do, whether it's the stories on piracy or it's stories on current affairs and politics or on conflict, we do it from an African perspective. All our contributors are African, so they put in their perspectives onto these stories. So even if broadcasters are only interested in that kind of content, we're hoping that our perspectives can make a difference to the way that story is told, and we can tell it in a slightly different way from a parachute journalist that comes into the country. The audience is now changing a little bit, and more of the public is actually coming and viewing the stories on the website and starting to comment and become involved in it, which is exactly what we wanted, but it wasn't our primary goal.
So who are these people who are coming to your website?
The audiences are from all over the world. It's mainly the diaspora, the people, the Africans that have moved outside the continent and gone to the US or Europe, and they're looking at the content because they're interested in stories from their home countries. So they are coming on the site increasingly more as they hear more about it. We haven't had the money to promote our website very well, but word of mouth is spreading and more people are coming on. Plus, there's interest from business people that want to come to the continent and want to know more about it, want to invest in Africa. We're getting quite large audiences from China and India, countries that are investing heavily in Africa. So again, they're looking for more information that's more reliable than what you see on the international news.
How does A24 Media help support local reporters and contributors?
Our model is very unique. We give 60% of any revenue we earn from contributor content back to the contributor. And most importantly, we never take the copyright of their content. So we never take it, we never sell it, which gives them the ability to be able to earn revenue from that content for many years to come. The other thing that we do is we help them on training. We see if we can get them equipment if they don't have it. We try and enhance their technical skills so that the product that they send us is of a higher quality and international standard quality. And we're giving them a platform to showcase their work to people all over the world.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you have quite a lot of hits from people in the diaspora. But if we're talking about on the continent, how do those with limited internet connections access your content?
Well, it's been a challenge. That's definitely one of our biggest challenges. I mean, obviously in East Africa now we've got the fiber cable coming in, so there's going to be a lot more access to the internet here. But we are also now putting a lot of our content onto mobile phones. We feel the mobile phone such a huge phenomenon in Africa and will be the future of communication on this continent. So we're putting a lot of our content up there. And most Africans, as you know, have mobile phones, sometimes more than one, depending on what countries they're in and how many networks there are. So we're looking at new innovative ways to get the content and the information to them.
Now, you were set up in 2008. How much success would you say you've had since your launch?
Well, it's been a tough year because we launched 10 days before the world's financial crisis, and so it wasn't the best time and it was very difficult. But we have had a fairly good year in terms of sales. We haven't sold as much as we would like, but we've learned a lot and we are continuing and we're still up and running. So I would count that as a success.
Now let's talk about the African media environment in general. How do you see it developing over the next, let's give it a time frame and say 3 years?
Oh, I think the African media environment is a very exciting place. With all this new media that we talked about, all the new technology that's becoming available, more and more people are having access to information. As a result, some of the problems that the media houses had in the past with governments, with censorship and issues like that, are becoming less and less of a problem because governments are having a hard time controlling information that's going out. So I think it's a very exciting time to be a journalist in Africa. The continent is thriving. This year we have the World Cup coming to South Africa, which we believe will be a huge boost to the entire continent. So we're very optimistic about the future. I think it's the best place in the world to be practicing journalism.
Tell us about Kenya. What's happening there?
Well, Kenya has been very interesting. Since the post-election violence, there's been a lot of talk about how the media was compromised and how the government is trying to put more controls in place in Kenya. They've just passed a bill recently that has been hugely and widely criticized in terms of trying to control ownership of the media. But the Kenyan media is very strong and very versatile, so they're having a hard time doing it. The media here is really taking the government on issues of corruption and mismanagement of funds and its basic incompetency since the coalition government was formed. So I think they're worried. And I think, you know, once the government starts taking on the media, I think, you know, the media is doing a good job, because otherwise they wouldn't be bothered if they weren't concerned. So I'm hoping that the media can stay together in Kenya and united and be able to continue doing the great work that they're doing.
Salim Amin, chairman of A24 Media in Kenya, thank you so much for joining us on Africa Media Matters.
Thank you, Audrey. It's been my pleasure.
And that's it for today. Thanks very much for listening. We hope you listen again to the next edition of Africa Media Matters. This program was brought to you by the Institute for War and Peace Reporting and made possible by the generous support of the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. To subscribe and for our terms of use, please go to iwpr.net/Africa Media Matters. Or you can subscribe through iTunes. IWPR, giving voice, driving change.